As the plane taxis down a runway, titles appear. Christine Lottie as Catherine, the pilot's wife.
Vision Flight 274, clear for takeoff. Roger.
Bright lights shine from under the jet's wings as it takes off into the night sky. Fade to black. More titles. Campbell Scott as Robert.
Vision Flight 274, change of departure frequency 124.6.
Now, in the darkness, small red dashes appear one at a time. More titles. Allison Pill as Maddie, Christy Mitchell as Mira, and John Hurd as Jack. Music by Lee Holdridge, edited by David Beatty.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain, Jack Lyons, from the flight deck. I'd like to welcome you aboard our Visionaire Flight 274 this morning from London to Boston. Just sit back and enjoy the ride. I'm going to turn off the seatbelt sign shortly so you can get up if you want to and move about the cabin, but it's a real good idea while you're in your seat to keep your seatbelts fastened, just in case of unexpected turbulence.
The red dashes join to form numbers on a digital clock. The time reads 3:26. More titles. Production design, Christian Wagner. Director of photography, Rudolf Blachek. Above the time, a button fades into view that reads, Snooze Alarm Set. A woman's hand reaches out and turns on a lamp beside the alarm clock. As the woman throws off her covers and gets out of bed, more titles appear. Co-producer Anita Shreve, producer Robert Markowitz, producer Judy Cairo Simpson. In a dimly lit hall, the woman runs her hand along a railing. A wedding band glints on her finger. She opens the door to another room and peeks in on a teenaged girl asleep in bed. At the front door, a shadowy figure knocks. The woman slowly walks downstairs in her nightshirt. More titles. Executive producer Stephanie Germain. Based on a novel by Anita Shreve. Teleplay by Anita Shreve and Christine Berardo. Directed by Robert Markowitz. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from CBS. Described by Carrie Danahy and Justin Soule. Read by Pat Lentz. The woman opens the door partway for a clean-cut man in a suit.
Mrs. Lyons?
As the woman looks at the gentleman, her eyes brim with tears. She glances away, blinking them back. Her lips tighten.
When? Earlier this morning.
She leans against a nearby wall and tightens her fist.
When?
The man reaches through the door.
About 10 miles off the coast of Ireland.
In the water?
No, in the air.
He gently holds her elbow.
It was almost certainly an explosion.
As Mrs. Lyons turns from the door and steps further into the house, the man enters behind her. She leans against a banister.
Are you sure it was Jack?
Yes.
Later, in the kitchen, the man puts his coat around Mrs. Lyons' shoulders.
How many on board?
104.
Any survivors?
They're searching.
As Mrs. Lyons sits down, the man opens a cabinet. A calendar hangs on the inside of the cabinet door. Mrs. Lyons' gaze focuses on it. The words Transport Airliners 2001 sit under a picture of a plane in flight. She imagines an explosion ripping the front of the plane apart. Mrs. Lyons lets out a deep breath as the man answers her phone.
Yeah. No comment. No comment. No comment. No comment.
He pours her a glass of water.
Are you from the airline?
No, the union. Robert Hart.
He hands her the glass.
I'm very sorry.
Mrs. Lyons stares off in a daze as Robert answers the phone.
Yes, it's under control.
In slow motion, he hangs up and faces Mrs. Lyons.
There's been a mistake. I got the plane wrong. You're the wrong wife.
She stares ahead blankly.
Is there someone you want me to call?
No.
Her gaze drifts to a red and yellow shoeshine rag. She remembers her husband briskly buffing his shoes with it, and she smiles to herself. Robert watches her.
Mrs. Lyons.
I'm sorry. It's Catherine. My name's Catherine.
Catherine looks up at Robert with tearful eyes.
I loved
him. On TV.
A witness reports seeing a bright flash in the sky from his fishing boat off the Irish coast.
It was moonlight and dark water, and bits of silver came falling down the sky and landing around the boat.
Have they found the CVR?
I wish I had more to tell you.
They were fluttering like birds. Birds that were wounded. They were spiraling down like...
Catherine remembers Jack typing on a laptop.
Spinning.
That was 83-year-old... It was a bomb, wasn't it?
Robert watches Catherine bow her head.
You're still in shock. You need some sugar.
He gets out some orange juice.
You got here fast. How'd you do it?
We have a plane.
Why? Why so fast, I mean?
To get here first. To inform you. To help you through it.
That's not why.
That's part of it.
Catherine's gaze lands on the kitchen table. Robert watches her. As Catherine runs her hand along the tabletop, she remembers. She and Jack kiss as his hand moves up her body. Jack knocks a plate off the table.
I have to call the school. They'll need to get a substitute.
No one's awake now.
Catherine stares blankly at him. Robert looks her over.
Would you like me to tell your daughter?
No, I can do that.
It's the press. Ignore it.
Hey, I'm afraid the lions are away from the den. But you can always leave a message for lovely lioness Catherine or cool cat Maddie or Jack, the king of the bees.
Robert hurries to the answering machine and turns the volume down. Catherine watches as he unplugs the phone.
It's to keep me from talking to the press, isn't it? That's why you're here. You don't want them to think pilot error, right?
Robert crosses his arms and bows his head. Now, fog fills the air around the lion's gray Cape Cod-style home. On the nearby road, headlights appear through the fog. Several news vans and trucks head up the winding road to the house. A man with a news camera walks past. Inside, a framed photo sits on a desk. It shows Jack with a young girl wearing his pilot's hat. As Catherine heads upstairs, she remembers Jack watching sports with his teenage daughter.
Maddie, sister her up. They're killing them. Okay, this is a good move, Beth.
Catherine slowly approaches her daughter's bedroom. The open door is decorated with dozens of pictures and notes. Catherine looks inside, then peers down the hallway.
Maddie?
Catherine goes into her own bedroom and approaches a closed door. She rests her head and shoulder against it and knocks.
Maddie?
What?
I have to talk to you.
I can't. I'm having a shower.
Catherine opens the door.
It's important.
What?
Maddie approaches, drying her hair with a towel. She stops as she sees her mother's tear-stained face. Catherine struggles to speak.
I have to tell you something.
Catherine reaches out to her daughter. Now, Maddie lies on her bed, gripping a piece of fabric in her teeth.
I'm right here, honey.
Catherine gently caresses her daughter's cheek. Outside the house, a group of men gather on the road. As a news van pulls up, a police car blocks its way and two cops get out, inside with Catherine and Maddie.
Please don't.
Catherine tries to pull the fabric from Maddie's clenched teeth. Outside, a neighbor hands a plate of brownies to a police officer, and he heads up the long driveway with them. In Maddie's room, Catherine's gaze drifts to a Celtics pennant on the wall, then to a clarinet on a music stand. She remembers Jack watching Maddie practice.
Play it.
Okay.
You know.
The officer approaches the front door with the brownies. Inside the bustling house, a flight attendant takes the plate and sets it on the kitchen counter next to the other dishes of food. Nearby, Robert talks on the phone.
Chew, right? I can't reach him today. I can't fax him today. And I can't get confirmation. And that's you. I know. That's what I'm saying. No, they're all over the place. That's why.
On the counter, a newspaper headline reads, Bomb Explosion, Visionaire Flight 274. Meanwhile, Maddie and Catherine watch the news.
Debris coming in from the crash of Vision Flight 274 confirms a massive explosion of some sort, possibly a bomb.
And no Did one they say a bomb?
It's not confirmed. Just a theory.
Here off the north coast of Ireland.
Maddie's lips tremble as she watches images of the crash site. A sneaker floats upside down, surrounded by bits of debris. A hook pulls a suitcase from the water. Maddie chokes back tears. Robert's sober gaze darts from the TV to Catherine.
Jack Lyons of the small town of could have bailed out. 45 miles from Boston. He could be floating in the ocean somewhere. That happens sometimes.
Catherine, give one of these. It's a Valium.
You carry these with you?
A petite woman with gray hair enters through the front door. Maddie's eyes fix on the TV as she puts the pill in her mouth. The gray-haired woman approaches Catherine and Maddie and puts her arms around them. Maddie squeezes the woman's arm, then continues watching the news.
Lynn, intelligence sources I spoke with confirm that there now exists credible threats of terrorist activity.
The woman pours liquor into a coffee mug and hands it to Catherine.
However, I would hasten to point out that authorities will not speculate at this early stage about any connection.
Shouldn't be watching this. Maddie, you come upstairs with me.
As the woman helps Maddie up, she spots Robert.
Who is this?
This is Robert. He's from the Pilots Union. This is Julia, my grandmother.
It's nice to meet you. I'm very sorry.
I'll be back shortly.
As Robert watches them leave, Catherine stares off sadly. Robert faces her.
Where did Jack stay last night?
The crew apartment.
Robert nods to himself.
What? He called from there to remind me to call Alfred about the shower.
Who's Alfred?
The plumber.
When they went to collect his things, the maid said no one had slept there last night.
Where was he then?
I don't know. Have you eaten anything?
No.
Are you friendly with the other wives?
They're mostly Brits. Why would I know them?
I thought you might have socialized, bumped into them at the crew apartment.
The crew apartment?
When you were there with Jack.
I was never there with Jack.
Robert's gaze flits questioningly. As Catherine puts her hand to her lips, Robert looks away and takes a deep breath.
When he was away, how did you get in touch with him?
He usually called us. It was easier that way because of his schedule.
Catherine wipes her nose and gazes at Robert with teary eyes. Robert looks down at his lap. Now, our view skims across a deep blue ocean. In her bathroom, Catherine splashes water on her face. As she pats her skin dry with a hand towel, she notices something on the counter. She picks up a brush with a comb stuck in its bristles. In a flashback, Jack tosses the brush.
Your hair looks nice.
Staring at herself in the mirror, Catherine sets the brush back down. She grabs a pair of jeans off the back of the door and searches through the pockets. On a piece of scrap paper, a handwritten list reads, To do, pick up dry cleaning, Bergdorf overnight robe to arrive on the 10th, extension cord, call gutter.
Bergdorf's, Mother's Day. You remembered.
Catherine smiles to herself and sets the list down beside a dry cleaning ticket and a handful of British pounds. She unfolds another piece of paper with cursive writing on it.
Here in the narrow passage and the pitiless north, perpetual betrayals.
Catherine stares at the poem for a moment, then folds it up. In a flashback, Jack stands by the car in his pilot's uniform holding his flight bag. He takes his cap from under his arm and smiles. In the bathroom, Catherine crumples up his jeans.
I trusted you not to die.
Later, Catherine watches TV.
Did the three officers in the cockpit have any warning of the impending disaster prior to the explosion? The discovery earlier today of the CVR, the cockpit voice recorder, may shed some light as the investigators try to piece together the cause of the Visionaire tragedy.
The crash claimed 104 lives here over the icy waters off the Irish coast early yesterday morning.
Now, Maddie stands on a small dock and looks out over a calm ocean inlet. Above her, Catherine stands on a balcony at the back of the house. Now, Catherine approaches the dock. At the edge, Maddie wears a bandana around her head and a heavy jacket. Catherine slowly moves toward the end of the dock and stops beside Maddie. She looks to her daughter, who stares out at the water and misty gray sky.
You know what the worst part is?
Tell me.
That morning before I left, he asked me if I wanted to go to a Celtics game. I was in a bad mood and I wanted to see what Jason was doing on Friday. And so I said, couldn't we just wait and see? He was hurt, Mom. I know he was.
He understood.
Maddie eyes her.
He did, honey. He told me before he left.
He did?
Catherine remembers. In a flashback, Jack bends down and briskly shines his shoes. He straightens.
They're really great seats. Can't believe that suddenly I'm second string. I get so little time with her as it is.
Yeah, he was fine with it. I mean, he joked about being second string now, but you know, when he makes jokes, it means he's okay.
As Catherine gives a reassuring smile, Maddie looks off pensively. They both gaze at the water.
Do you know anything about penguins?
No, not much.
I saw this documentary about them. What they do is the male picks out this one female from like hundreds. But he picks this one. He lays 5 stones at her feet. And if she accepts them, then they're mates for life.
That's nice.
And at the aquarium with my class, there are these 2 penguins, like, mating. And the male lay on top of the female, sort of quivering. And they looked really happy, like they were in love. And this jerk in my class kept making weird jokes.
He's probably embarrassed.
You know, Mom, I've done it.
Maddie levels her gaze on her mother.
Are we talking about what I think we're talking about?
Are you mad?
When was this?
Last year. Remember Tommy?
Catherine shakes her head and her eyes well with tears.
You were only 14.
You're upset.
No,
I can tell.
No, I'm not upset. I just... Well, you could have picked a better time to tell me, that's all. Were you at least careful?
What do you think? I'm going to take chances? It's fine, Mom. I'm fine. I just wanted to find out what it's like.
Well, glad you told me.
I wanted to before, but I thought you'd have to tell. Thought you'd have to tell Daddy.
As Maddie looks away, Catherine gazes at her and shakes her head.
What?
It's just that, sex is a very precious gift, honey. Even penguins know that. It should... Well, it's something that should be saved for a very special person.
It was only once, okay? I just had to get it out of the way.
Catherine tightens her lips and stares at her daughter with teary eyes.
Excuse me. Hey, Maddie.
I'll be at Julia's.
Wait, please.
Maddie, please wait!
As Maddie hurries toward the house, Catherine stops beside Robert.
Some people from the safety board are here. They want to ask you a few questions.
Inside the house, 8 officials sit in the living room. A gray-haired man stares at a chessboard as a younger man eats a donut. Catherine enters.
Catherine, this is Dick Summers.
The gray-haired man.
He's an investigator from the safety board.
Ms. Lyons, we just want to ask you a few questions. This is my colleague, Henry Boyd.
Hi.
Henry holds out his hand with the donut.
Hello?
Chief. I'm Chief Pilot Bill Tierney.
I'm deeply sorry, ma'am.
Catherine gazes at the pilot's uniform and remembers Jack by the car. She imagines the uniform underwater.
He was an excellent pilot. One of our best.
Thank you. So, do you know what's on the CVR tape?
No information from the tapes has been officially released yet.
But you know what's on it?
No, I'm afraid I don't. Let's get started, shall we?
Are all these people from the safety board?
No. Steve and Janice here are FBI. These gentlemen are attorneys. They're here to listen. Please, sit.
Robert takes a seat near the lawyers as Mr. Summers sits across from Catherine.
So what can you tell us about your husband's behavior just prior to him leaving for the airport?
Took a shower around 4 in the afternoon, and then he got dressed and came downstairs and shined his shoes.
Did he call anyone that day?
Summers picks up a chess piece.
I have no idea.
Did he seem agitated or depressed?
Nothing unusual. He was a little annoyed that the shower was leaking.
Summers' eyes squint as he smiles. The FBI agents look on soberly. Robert bows his head.
So did he have a drink prior to leaving for the airport?
Don't answer that.
No, it's okay. No, nothing at all.
Did your husband have any close friends in the UK?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Did he regularly call anyone over there?
Well, sure. I mean, he flew with them.
Catherine eyes the chess piece in Summers' hand and he puts it down.
Did you pack your husband's suitcase?
No, I never do.
What about his flight bag?
Absolutely not.
A woman in uniform answers the phone.
Hello? Sure. Mrs. Lyons, your daughter is on the phone. She says it's urgent.
Catherine gets up and takes the phone from the woman. The officials watch her as she goes onto the balcony.
What is it, Maddie? What's wrong?
Mom, Taylor just called and said it's on TV that they think Daddy had something to do with the crash.
What are they saying? Pilot error?
No, that it was, like, on purpose.
Oh, it's absolutely not true. It's just a ridiculous rumor, honey.
But does it mean that they think Daddy would kill all those people?
Listen to me. You are not to believe any of this, okay? I can't talk right now, all right, honey? Okay, I'll call you back.
Maddie hangs up the phone. As Catherine goes back inside with her head held high, Summers watches her stride in.
Mr. Summers, might I be permitted to ask you a question?
Sure.
What other scenarios besides suicide have you imagined, given the material that is theoretically on the CVR?
I'm sorry, I'm not at liberty to discuss that just now.
Really?
Yeah.
But I guess I'm not at liberty to answer any more questions. Just now.
Summers watches, slack-jawed, as Catherine leaves the room. Now, Maddie grabs a bicycle off the front stoop of a quaint house. She carries the bike to the street and sets it down. As she gets on and pedals away, Julia exits the house and waves to her.
Maddie!
Now, on the beach, Catherine remembers.
So what can you tell us about your husband's behavior?
Did he have a drink prior to leaving for the airport?
Does it mean that they think Daddy would kill all those people?
Did you pack your husband's suitcase? What about his flight bag? Flight bag. Did he seem agitated or depressed?
Catherine looks out at the gray fog hanging over the breaking waves. Jack walks beside her.
Hey, what's wrong?
Nothing.
Did I do something?
No. Drop it.
Okay.
Foggy days, they depress me. Sometimes gray days make me feel like I have no center. No real belief, you know?
You have me, you have Maddie. Aren't we enough?
Time for a sugar fix?
Robert holds out a box of donuts. Catherine grins and takes the box.
Thank you. Are they gone?
Oh, no.
You know, Jack had a perfect safety record. He loved flying.
They know that. They have to do it.
Well, that's ridiculous. He would never take a plane down.
Atop a nearby sand dune, a photographer snaps their picture. Robert runs toward him.
Hey! Excuse me. Give her a break, okay? All right?
The photographer leaves. Now inside, Summers opens a book entitled Ireland, Land of the Poets. As he looks through it, a man hands him a sheet of paper.
Here you go, sir.
As Summers looks the page over, he raises his eyebrows. Catherine enters, taking off her scarf and coat.
Excuse me. I just have one thing to say. My husband was healthy, both physically and mentally. We were happily married.
Mrs. Lyons.
I'm not going to answer any more questions without a lawyer present. And nothing is to be taken from this house without permission.
Did Jack ever mention the IRA?
Jack wasn't political. He wasn't even Catholic.
His mother is Irish.
Was. His mother died when he was 9.
No. I don't think that's the case.
He reads from a piece of paper.
Madigan Rice, Forest Park Nursing Home, 47 Adams Street, Wesley, Minnesota.
A disbelieving smile spreads across Catherine's lips.
Jack's mother's alive?
Apparently so.
Robert looks from Summers to Catherine. Summers continues reading.
Born 1924, married 3 times, divorced 3 times, 1 child, a son, John Fitzwilliam Lyons. Born April 18, 1947.
Summers holds the paper out to Catherine, who glares at him. Robert steps forward warily, eyeing Catherine, then Summers. Catherine keeps her gaze fixed on Summers as she steps closer and takes the paper.
His military records from Vietnam.
As Catherine reads the paper, she remembers Jack brushing his hair.
Today's her birthday. Who would have been?
It's a terrible age to lose a mother. You were what, only 9 years old?
Let's not talk about it.
Now, Maddie rides her bike down the street. She approaches her driveway where police barricades block the entrance from a throng of reporters. The reporters and camera people crowd around Maddie as she rides her bike between two of the barricades. Catherine waits for her at the top of the driveway.
Hey.
What's going on?
It's not true, honey.
How do you know?
I knew your father.
Maybe.
What's that supposed to mean, maybe?
Maybe you didn't know him. How do you ever know when you know a person?
I don't know. You feel it.
Do you feel you know me?
Yeah, pretty well.
When I said I'd only done it once, you believed me, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
You have no idea what's real and what isn't.
So what? You lied to me?
If I told you the truth, I knew you couldn't handle it.
Could we talk about this inside, please?
No. I don't want a lot of lies to make things better. It can't be made better. I don't want to pretend.
Fine.
Maddie pushes her bike away. Now the Lyons' gray shingled house sits against the gloomy sky. Nearby, long stretches of rock extend into the calm blue ocean. A window frames a view of the water. Above it, a black and white photo shows a man flying in an open cockpit. Catherine gazes at the picture and remembers.
Okay, can you see? You can't see, right?
I can't see a thing.
All right, watch. There's a little rock here.
Okay.
That's it. Okay, wait. Okay, now you got it. Right here, there's a rim.
Whoa!
There's
Jack
rim
leads right Catherine here up the house's steps.
When I tell you, take off the blindfold.
Okay.
Now.
She removes a red scarf from her eyes.
You bought us a house.
Merry Christmas.
Without talking to me first?
I thought you'd be happy.
Robert peeks into the room.
Hey.
Hey.
You're here early?
I want to make sure you're all right. Are you okay?
I'm fine.
Was Jack a secretive kind of guy?
No, not really. I mean, there were certain things he didn't like to talk about, but...
And you didn't ask.
Are you married?
I was.
Did you tell your wife everything?
That's why I'm divorced.
Right.
Catherine turns away and her smile fades.
It was a wonderful marriage.
Behind her, Robert gazes around the room, then leaves. Later, Catherine sits at Jack's desk, tapping a piece of scrap paper with writing scribbled on it. She picks up a phone and dials.
Forest Park.
Hello, yes. I'd like to speak with Madigan Rice, please.
Mrs. Rice can't come to the phone. She isn't feeling too well. Anyway, she doesn't hear too good.
Okay,
Are you a relative?
No, I'm not.
She nervously taps an old envelope.
Her son was killed in a plane crash, and I just thought that she should know.
You mean that Vision crash? Oh, how awful. You want me to tell her? I'll have to ask my supervisor. Hello? Hello?
Yes, I think that she should know. Someone should tell her. Thank you.
Okay, may I have your name, please?
Catherine hangs up. She tosses the used envelope into the trash, and it lands backside up. Something is written on it. Mura 330. Catherine shakes her head and faces a blank computer screen. In a flashback, Jack storms out of the room and throws his laptop down the stairs. Back in the office, Catherine's gaze drifts to the wastebasket, and she picks up the discarded envelope.
I'm afraid he'd stopped going to church a long time ago.
Catherine talks with a priest.
At least 16 years. That's how long we've been married.
Jack was raised Catholic?
Oh, parochial school, altar boy, the works.
And what about you?
Methodist.
Oh, I meant, how are you doing?
I'm okay.
Tell me about Jack.
Okay, he was, hardworking, he liked to fish. He was very close to his daughter. Didn't like rainy days or traffic jams. He liked risk.
And your marriage?
Close. We never fought. Ever. We were in love a very long time. Longer than most couples, I'd say.
And then what happened?
What happened? Nothing. We just passed out of being in love to, you know, loving.
The priest nods and smiles kindly at Catherine.
Look, Father, I doubt very much there will be a body. Can you have a funeral without a body?
We could wait a bit longer.
No. A memorial service, then whatever. I want to honor my husband now. They're trying to crucify him.
Now, Catherine watches a news program which shows a digitized recreation of the crash.
I'm saying that for the record. Officially, they're still looking at all the possibilities.
And unofficially?
Well, a source close to the investigation says there was a struggle of some sort in the cockpit just before the blast.
Catherine turns off the TV and picks up the phone.
Tides in.
Robert Hart, please.
I'm sorry, Mr. Hart's checked out.
When?
He checked out a few minutes ago.
Thank you.
Now, Catherine drives her SUV down the driveway and speeds toward the reporters at the bottom. They dive out of her way as she turns onto the street and races off. Now, in town, Catherine passes several old buildings and quaint shops. She pulls to a stop in front of an inn. Robert follows a porter out of the building and spots Catherine on the sidewalk.
Just left a message at your place. I have to go to Washington for a couple of days. I'll be back.
You know what's on the CDR. You've heard the tape.
Jack made two phone calls. Crew apartment that last night. One to you and one to make a dinner reservation at a place called Opa, a Greek restaurant.
Reservations for how many?
For two. Do you know who you might have met that night?
Tell me what's on the tape.
I haven't actually heard it. All right. You sure you want to hear this?
Yes.
Flight's normal until 56 minutes into it. Jack leaves the cockpit, probably goes to the John.
Do you have a minute, Mrs. Lyons? Just one question?
Come on.
Robert takes Catherine's arm and hurries her toward a sedan. A driver opens the passenger door for them.
You can talk here. Dan, give us 5 minutes.
Sure thing.
As Catherine gets in, Robert closes the door and hurries around to the driver's side. He gets in and faces Catherine.
Okay, Martin is the co-pilot. He complains. Can't hear through his headphones.
This reception is bloody awful. I've got it coming in loud and clear. But then this headset is bad. I can't hear a thing. It could be the plug. Here, try mine.
In the cockpit, the navigator hands his headphones to the co-pilot.
It's not the plug.
Perhaps Lyons is a spare.
He opens Jack's flight bag.
What's going on?
What the hell? Is this a joke?
Back in the car.
Sullivan says again, what the hell? Christ. That's when the tape ends.
But why doesn't Jack say anything?
No one knows for sure what happened.
But he would have said something. He would have been surprised unless... unless he knew.
Catherine, one phrase different and the whole tape could mean something else. Even with the words exactly as I've just said them, tape doesn't necessarily mean a thing.
But it does. I mean, something happened.
Look, the union hates the accusation of suicide more than anybody. It's a nightmare for us. Every congressman will start calling for stricter psychological testing of pilots. The sooner the case gets resolved, the better.
Later, as Catherine walks back to her car, she passes a newspaper vending machine. The headline on the paper inside reads, Vision Crash Investigation Continues. A news photo underneath shows Robert and Catherine talking on the beach. Now, Catherine sifts through a laundry basket and pulls out a pair of jeans. She takes a handful of paper from one of its pockets. Later, she holds Jack's to-do list as she talks on the phone.
The robe was supposed to be delivered on the 10th, but it never came.
When did your husband place the order?
I'm not sure, but it had to be before the 6th.
Ah, here it is. I went out two-day express. You on the tracking number?
Okay.
Now Catherine flips through a book of poetry.
Here in the narrow passage and the pitiless north, perpetual betrayals, relentless, resultless fighting.
She finds a poem matching the one in Jack's pocket entitled Antrim.
A struggle for survival of hungry, blind cells of life in the womb.
Later, at Jack's desk, Catherine's gaze drifts over the note on the envelope back to a 15-digit phone number labeled M at A's. She flips the phone number over. It's written on the back of the dry cleaning ticket. She turns to Jack's computer screen, where a list shows people's names next to their email addresses. Catherine scrolls down the list, highlighting each name as she goes. She stops and looks closer. The highlighted name reads Miura Boland, M. Boland at zappyman.co.uk. Now, Catherine picks up the phone and dials.
Hello?
Yes, hello. Is there a Muir there?
Who?
Muir?
You mean Miura?
Oh, okay, sorry.
Miura was here, but she's gone back to her own place. Are you a friend?
Yes. Yes, I am. Could I get that number, please?
555-2146.
Darn it. Say it again, please.
555-2146.
Okay, thanks so much.
As Catherine hangs up, she holds the receiver by her mouth and looks down thoughtfully. She dials again.
Hello?
Yes, hello, is Miura there?
Who is this?
I'm looking for a Miura Boland.
There's no Miura here.
Well, could you tell me how... Hello?
Catherine hangs up. Now a man bangs on Catherine's front door. In her bed, Catherine wakes up. As the man continues knocking, Catherine throws off her covers and gets out of bed. Downstairs, she opens the front door wearing her robe.
Yes?
Mrs. Lyons? Agent Foley, FBI.
Do you have a warrant?
The agent hands her the warrant and enters, followed by several others.
Here you go.
As they file inside, one agent hands Catherine her morning paper. Under the headline, Bomb in Cockpit, is a picture of her and Maddie.
I'm going to school.
You don't have to, honey.
I can't stand it here. Everywhere I look, he's there. I want to stay at Julia's for a while.
Maddie, don't do that. You don't have to go. Wait, one second, please. Hello?
Maddie leaves the house as Catherine talks on the phone.
No, Helen, I just need a couple more days, okay? Of course the kids are going to hate their substitute. That's what kids do. They'll survive.
Now, an agent carries the hard drive to Jack's computer downstairs as others move in and out of the bedrooms. Robert arrives. As he walks along the balcony to the back door, he spots the agent with the hard drive and stares at it quizzically. He enters the house and approaches Catherine.
I tried to get here before, though.
How could Jack have carried a bomb onto a plane? With all that security, it's impossible.
Well, actually, that's the easy part. Pilots and flight attendants do it all the time.
Smuggle explosives?
No, jewelry, mostly. Gold and silver. Yeah. Customs almost never check my flight bag. I mean, I'm not saying Jack did it, but...
I have to find out what happened. I want to clear his name.
Catherine, 30 agencies in 3 countries are working on this case. They don't need you.
I don't care. I have to do it.
It's too dangerous. Who do you think puts bombs on airplanes? Terrorists.
I have my own reasons, okay?
Listen, don't try to be a hero, okay? Your daughter's already lost one parent. She can't afford to lose you. Stay here and deal with your grief.
I can't cry anymore. That part is over.
Now in Julia's backyard.
Only be gone a couple of days.
She'll be fine with me.
Catherine nods. Julia looks to her apprehensively.
When your parents drowned, it hurt, so I thought I'd burst apart. The pain of losing a son, it's unimaginable. But there you were, a little girl, bewildered. That's what saved me. Taking care of you saved me.
So, what are you saying, that I shouldn't go? I should stay here with Maddie?
No, I didn't say that. Tears Maddie apart being with you right now. A couple of days watching video and eating popcorn will do her good.
Julia smiles warmly as she throws twigs onto an outdoor fireplace.
You loved him. I know you did. I loved him too, but you're not going to find him, Catherine. He's gone.
I just need to find out why.
There is no why. It doesn't matter. What's done can't be undone. Sometimes it's better not to know.
Catherine casts her gaze downward. Julia takes her bag and walks her toward the car. Now, a plane takes off from a runway. Inside, Catherine stares out the window.
Gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Our flying time will be 7 hours 15 minutes at a cruising altitude of 38,000 feet. Weather across the Atlantic appears calm, and we anticipate a smooth flight for you.
Unfortunately, they're looking at rain and temperatures of 9 degrees Celsius. That's about 38 degrees Fahrenheit at our destination. But I'll update that as we get closer to London.
Catherine remembers.
London? No. London's no fun. It's foggy and it rains all the time. Hate it.
I'm gonna be with you.
You wouldn't be with me.
Why?
Because the training sessions are forever. You'd never even see each other.
Oh, please.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
As they kiss, Jack knocks the plate off the kitchen table. The plane touches down. Now Big Ben towers over a London street. As cars and double-decker buses pass, a black taxi pulls to a stop. Catherine gets out, carrying an umbrella. Standing in the middle of the road, she looks around a moment, then heads off. Now, outside a restaurant, a sign in the shape of an olive reads, Opa, Greek Taverna. Through a large window, Catherine spots Jack. He sits across the table from a woman with blonde hair pulled into a bun. Caressing her hand, he talks and smiles. Catherine looks closer. Now, a young man with sideburns sits opposite the blonde woman. Catherine lets out a deep breath and continues on. Later, Catherine walks down a street. She passes a bicycle propped against the side of a brick building and a strolling couple. As Catherine walks, she checks a piece of paper and studies the brick homes beside her. Stopping, she checks the note again and looks up at a weathered white door. A number on the side of the house reads 2050. Catherine slowly climbs the steps to the door. The door opens, revealing a young woman with green eyes and jet black hair. As the woman stares questioningly, Catherine tries to speak.
I'm looking for a Mira Boland.
Catherine, you better come in.
As Mira steps aside, Catherine stands slack-jawed. She enters the house, and Mira closes the door behind her. In the living room, a photo of a little girl sits on a mantelpiece. Behind it, a mirror's reflection shows Mira leading Catherine inside.
You knew my name.
The dark-haired woman faces her.
So, you knew Jack was married?
I knew about you.
Yeah.
Mira crouches to the floor and picks up a baby from an infant carrier. She holds the child to her shoulder. Catherine cocks her head. Mira gives her a cold stare.
When did this start with my husband?
5.5 years ago.
Catherine's mouth slowly drops open.
We met in the air.
Catherine stares at the young Irish woman's mouth as she talks.
I was a flight attendant at Vision.
Her necklace holds a medallion of a cross.
We fell in love.
Catherine shakes her head.
You had an affair.
Catherine turns and sees the little girl from the photo. The wide-eyed youngster watches her as she walks past.
Sorry, darling, sit down.
The little girl lounges on the floor near a coloring book. Catherine looks up at Mira and eyes the baby at her shoulder.
This is Jack's child?
The baby's fingers grasp at Mira's neck near the cross medallion.
Yeah.
The two women nod. Mira's eyelids flutter slightly.
They both are.
Catherine glances down, then smiles tearfully. Her gaze drifts to the little girl, who looks up from her coloring. Catherine then turns her attention to Mira's hand, holding her baby's head. A silver wedding band encircles her ring finger.
We were married 4.5 years ago.
Catherine imagines Mira's ringed hand on a pillow. The dark-haired Irish woman pulls her arm back and reclines in bed, smiling. Catherine's eyes well with tears.
How could you?
I loved him. I was willing to do whatever it took.
Catherine swallows. Mira touches her chin to her baby's head.
I'll just go put him down.
Mira holds out her hand for her daughter. The little girl takes it and walks up the stairs with her. Catherine steps over to a shelf along the wall and picks up a framed photo of Mira and Jack in the flat. The smiling Irish woman stands with her head on her husband's shoulder. Catherine sets down the photo, then moves into the next room. As she pulls off her gloves, her gaze fixes on a table. Stuffing her gloves into her coat pocket, she approaches it. She hesitates, then runs her hand between the wood surface and lace tablecloth. She remembers lying on her table at home. Jack is on top of her, passionately kissing her lips and neck. Back in the flat, Catherine stands over the table, staring off distantly. Mira appears behind her and folds her arms.
How did it happen?
Mira approaches her.
Jack was torn. He said he wouldn't leave Matty.
Catherine nods.
He couldn't do that to his daughter.
So you knew about us from the beginning?
Jack and I never had secrets.
No, you just went ahead and married him, didn't you?
It was his idea.
Right.
Catherine sits at the table, her fingers absently typing on a laptop computer. Mira walks off. In a flashback, Jack sits in his home office typing on another laptop.
You spend more time up here with the computer than you do with me.
Jack glances over his shoulder, back at Mira's home.
We were married. After I became pregnant with Deirdre.
Mira stands by the mirror over the mantel.
You know, it wasn't important to me.
Catherine nods pensively.
Jack wanted to be married in a Catholic church.
Jack never went to church.
He was devout. He went to Mass whenever he could.
A devout Catholic with two wives.
Catherine stands. She approaches Mira at the mantel and picks up a framed photo. It shows Jack holding his bundled baby. Deirdre stands at his side.
I saw your photograph in the papers.
Catherine returns the picture to the mantel.
So are the FBI investigating the case?
So they say.
And did they talk to you?
No, they call you.
No.
Catherine stares at the photo.
What's your son's name?
Dermot. After my brother.
Catherine nods, her jaw clenched.
He used to be so romantic. He used to compliment me all the time.
Her flashback continues.
I can't remember the last time you told me I was beautiful.
God, Catherine.
Back at Mira's.
How did it work?
I'd pick him up near the crew apartment. And I'd bring him here.
And you just stayed in touch by email?
Catherine looks around the room.
Did Jack pay for this?
The house is mine by inheritance.
But he gave you money.
Mira stares at her. Catherine grins knowingly. As Mira walks off, Catherine purses her lips. She imagines the dark-haired woman in bed. Mira smiles seductively and arches her back.
Where are you? Right. No, that's fine. When for? Tonight. Is there something wrong?
In a bathroom, Catherine runs her hand over men's toiletries in a medicine cabinet. She picks up a brush with a comb resting in its bristles. She pictures Jack flipping a brush, then running it through his hair.
Your hair looks nice.
He turns. In front of him, Mira lies in bed, back with Catherine. Catherine walks down the hallway. Beyond an open door, Deirdre's legs kick leisurely on her bed. The little girl lies on her stomach. Catherine moves into the next room. She stops and takes a look around, then steps over to an unmade bed. A crucifix hangs on the wall above. Catherine gently touches a pillow, then runs her hands along the edge of a white sheet. She stares off vacantly for a moment, then looks down at the bed. She imagines Jack lying in bed, then remembers her own hand feeling the sheets of her bed at home. Now, Mira climbs on top of Jack and kisses him. Her silver wedding ring rests on her finger. The couple's kisses grow more passionate. Now, Catherine reaches into an open drawer on the bedside table. She picks up a photograph. It shows Jack sitting on a couch with Maddie. Behind her head, Jack's fingers make bunny ears. Now, at their home, the father and daughter snap their fingers. They sit in front of a TV.
Yes! Did that work? Or this works every time. Don't use it up.
Now, in Mira's closet, Catherine slides out a flight bag from a corner and opens it. It's empty. She remembers Jack holding his own bag. The bag in the closet is labeled Flight Crew. Catherine slides it back into its corner, then rummages through a row of hanging clothes. She moves a robe to the front of the rack and eyes its stitched flower pattern. Now the flashback in the home office continues.
Do you know how long it's been since we've made love?
I didn't know we were keeping track.
Back in the closet, the robe's label reads, Bergdorf Goodman. Catherine remembers her husband's to-do list. She pulls a card from the robe's pocket. The front shows a picture of a man and woman about to kiss. Catherine reads the message inside.
Happy birthday, my love, Jack.
She closes the letter. Later, she approaches Deirdre's room.
I'll do the best I can. It's not so simple with the children. Right.
Catherine stands in Deirdre's doorway.
Hi.
The little girl sits up in bed. Catherine glances toward the TV.
What are you watching?
Danger Mouse.
Oh, yeah, my daughter used to watch that when she was younger.
What's her name?
Maddie. It's short for Madigan.
That's my granny's name. She lives in America.
Oh.
Deirdre handles a plastic donut-shaped toy. Catherine grins.
Do you want to see my doll?
Oh, yes, sure.
Deirdre hands her a doll with curly blonde hair, then rolls the donut-shaped toy around her fingers.
My daddy gave her to me for Christmas.
That's really nice.
You talk like him.
Do I?
Meanwhile, Mira talks on the phone.
Well, I can be there within the hour. I have something else to take care of. I said, it's fine. I'll be there.
Later, she heads downstairs and grabs a jacket off the banister. Catherine meets her.
What was the significance of Antrim?
It's where I was born, in Northern Ireland. Look, I'm sorry, you're going to have to go.
No. I meant the poem, Antrim.
It was Jack's favorite.
She packs a bag.
Here in the narrow passage in the pitiless north, perpetual betrayals.
Perpetual betrayals, yeah.
It's about the troubles there.
What happened on Jack's plane?
I don't know.
You were with him that last night, right?
Only till 4 a.m, then he left for work.
You went out to dinner with him, right?
That's right.
So how was he? Was he upset?
Mira straightens to face her.
It got to him, didn't it? All the lies and the double life. He couldn't live with himself, right?
No, it wasn't that, not at all. There are things I can't talk about.
Catherine's eyes well with tears.
Just go home.
She holds out Catherine's purse.
Because I have no more to tell you.
Catherine's jaw hangs open. She shakes her head.
I'm sorry for having hurt you.
I don't know how you live with yourself.
Catherine takes her purse and walks past the other woman.
I'm not sorry for having had him.
Catherine leaves. Outside, raindrops fall on blurry umbrellas. Our view slowly comes into focus. Catherine walks among a crowd of pedestrians, her hair soaked. She holds one hand across her stomach and the other over her mouth as she treads along. She passes a black automobile. A man with a white beard sits inside. As Catherine wipes her nose with her finger, the man climbs out. Catherine sets her hand on a wet concrete wall and leans against it. She lowers her head, body quivering. With her hand, she shields her face from the indifferent passers-by. Rain continues to pelt the brick sidewalk. Later, Catherine crosses the street to a red phone booth. Shoulders hunched, she opens the door and takes refuge inside. Schoolgirls in black ties and plaid skirts run across the street and pass Catherine in the phone booth.
The award for highest achievement in music, Maddie Lyon.
In a flashback, a banner reads Ely High School. On a stage below, Maddie holds a clarinet in one hand and a trophy in the other. Later.
Can I phone Dad and tell him I really want to?
He's sleeping.
I'll wake him up.
Maddie holds a cell phone to her ear.
He's not there.
No, he's gotta be.
No, he's not.
Back in London, a man stands outside the phone booth. Catherine steps out, letting the white-bearded man inside. In slow motion, umbrella-toting locals crowd the sidewalk. A bus passes a storefront window. Inside, red, white, and yellow towels sit neatly folded in a row. Catherine appears outside the window and stares at one. In a flashback, Jack shines his shoe with an identical towel, then gives Catherine a kiss. Back in the home office.
Damn, interesting.
I'm on a
computer.
What's this all about?
It's about you and me. I feel like I don't know you anymore.
Oh, you want me to go?
Go? What do you mean, go?
You want to put an end to this? You want it to end?
God, what are you saying? You're crazy.
I'm crazy.
Yeah, all I said is you're too wrapped up in the computer.
I'm crazy.
Jack storms out and chucks his laptop over the hallway railing. It smashes apart on the floor below. Now, ducks skim across the surface of a misty pond. The sky over the surrounding parkland is gray and overcast. Catherine sits on a bench opposite a stone fountain. Her wet hair hangs limply on her shoulders. She stares ahead blankly as she nervously pulls on a loose thread at one end of her knitted red scarf.
All right, wait here.
Okay.
When I tell you, take off the blindfold.
Okay, now.
In a flashback, Catherine unties the same scarf from over her eyes. Back in the park, she continues to tug at its frayed end. A wrinkly-faced man in a charcoal cap glances at her as he passes. Catherine pulls off her scarf, leaves it on the bench's armrest, and goes. Now a TV set shows a soccer match. Catherine enters a smoky pub. She takes a look around, then makes her way across the crowded room.
Excuse me.
A man squeezes past her, holding up his pint of beer. Catherine rubs her hands together, then moves to an empty seat at the bar. She smiles at the bartender, her wet skin glistening. He offers a towel.
There you go, my love. That'll dry you off.
Oh, thank you.
Hello. What's your poison?
She points at a tap.
Oh, I have one of those, please.
Right.
Thanks.
At the front door, the wrinkly-faced man enters. Catherine sits with her hand on her chin. With a pensive stare, she gets up and leaves. As the bartender sets down her pint, he finds her gone. Shaking his head, he sets the glass off to the side. The wrinkly-faced man takes Catherine's seat at the bar.
What'll it be, Governor?
Pint of young special, please.
Roger.
The bartender moves off to get his drink. Now, at the Lord Nelson Hotel, Catherine finds Robert standing in the hallway as she approaches her room.
What are you doing here?
Worried.
Catherine faces the door to her room.
Okay.
She unlocks the door and heads inside. Robert follows. Catherine folds her arms across her wet clothing. Robert shifts his feet and eyes her as she removes her overcoat.
There was another woman.
Catherine sits on the bed.
There was another wife.
Robert lowers his gaze.
When you told me not to come, did you know?
I suspected. Maybe a girlfriend.
He had a son and another daughter.
Catherine raises her eyebrows.
Christ.
Yeah.
She flashes a smile, then shudders slightly.
Here.
Robert moves to a dresser table and unscrews a tiny liquor bottle, which he carries over to her.
Take this.
He pours the liquor into a glass. She takes it from him and drinks.
I'm really very sorry, Catherine.
No, you're not. You got the answer to your question.
And that would be?
That would be yes, Jack had secrets. Oh, man. You hit the jackpot on this one, didn't you? Hey, get it? Jackpot. Jack.
You want to talk about it?
Tell me about your marriage. You sound like a priest, Father Robert.
Slow and easy, Catherine.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine walks over to the dresser and refills her glass. She drinks, holding her arm across her stomach. Robert sits on the bed, facing her.
It was a fraud. The whole thing. I pretended it was a wonderful marriage. Guess what? Turns out it was just really bad soap opera.
Are you always this hard on yourself?
Yeah, well, what kind of woman settles for half a marriage?
Most women, frankly.
Oh, don't patronize me, please. I mean, where the hell have I been? How could I not have seen it?
You'd be surprised how much a person can hide.
Robert, he touched his computer more than he touched me. He spent more time in London than he did at home, and when he did come back, it was Maddie that he couldn't wait to see, not me. Oh, my God, Maddie.
She'll be all right.
She lost her virginity and I didn't even know about it.
Okay, Catherine.
It's not okay. It's not. He robbed me. He robbed us. I didn't know him. How am I supposed to grieve for him?
Catherine holds her hand over her nose as she cries. Robert helps her out of her wet sweater. He sets it down, then embraces her consolingly.
Oh. Oh, God.
Catherine slowly reaches up and holds his back. Robert closes his eyes as she rests her head on his shoulder. He runs his hand through her damp hair, then moves her back slightly to face him. His lips move hesitantly toward her mouth. Catherine leans closer, then falters.
I've got enough regrets. I don't think I want to add one more right now.
What do you want?
If I get myself cleaned up, would you take me out to dinner?
Robert cocks his head. Later at Opa, the Greek taverna, he and Catherine sit at a corner table. A woman's reflection appears on the window outside as she checks out the restaurant, then moves along. Inside.
Still doesn't make sense. Still doesn't explain what happened in the cockpit.
All I want to do is go home and see Maddie. I have to figure out what I'm going to tell her.
A waiter refills her glass with white wine.
Thank you.
She glances up and meets the bearded waiter's gaze. He stares at her a moment, then walks off.
Did you ask Muro about the empty flight bag?
No, why?
It's a little unusual. She didn't say anything about the day before the crash.
No, just that she didn't know anything.
Catherine stares distantly out the window.
Why? What are you thinking?
I don't know. The Catholic thing? Irish connection?
Do you think she knows more?
Oh, you?
She gapes at him. Daytime. Cars and buses pass each other on a narrow street. Catherine exits the Lord Nelson Hotel and heads down the sidewalk. Later, she passes several parked bikes outside Mura's flat. She climbs up the short set of stairs and uses the knocker. The door swings open. Inside stands the bearded waiter from Opa. Catherine's jaw hangs open.
Oh, I'd like to see Mura.
She's gone away.
Do you know when she'll be back?
She's not coming back.
Who are you?
You go away now. You leave her be. You'll not be finding her.
Could you just get...
The man shuts the door in her face. Catherine whacks it with her hand, then walks off. Now the daylight on the door fades. The door opens, and the bearded waiter walks out wearing a black wool cap. He shuts the door and heads off down the street. He moves past a wooden gate between several brick columns. Catherine opens the gate. She peers discreetly around the corner, then follows the waiter. Behind her, a black car pulls up alongside the gate and stops. Inside sits the man with the white beard from the pub. He raises a cell phone to his ear, speaks, and nods. Now, in a park, the bearded waiter walks past a patch of white and yellow daffodils. He trudges across the lawn to a pathway. Several yards behind him, Catherine follows. She stops for a moment and watches him, then continues onward. The waiter disappears past a tree. Catherine picks up her pace to follow. As she moves off, Robert approaches from another park trail, his tan trench coat billowing in the wind. He surveys the area as he walks. The waiter leads Catherine past several rows of benches facing the same direction. On one bench sits a man with a shaved head. His gaze follows Catherine as she passes. He gets up and trails her. Down the path, Robert's pace slows as he sees the new pursuer. Now in an outdoor street market, the waiter passes booths with various vendors. He disappears behind a produce stand. Nearby, Catherine stops behind a shelf of teddy bears and scans the vicinity. Shoppers crowd her view in every direction. Elsewhere, the waiter walks past a hot dog cart. A police officer passes on the other side. Keeping his eyes on him, the waiter backs away, then turns and rushes off. Catherine approaches along storefront display windows. Seeing the waiter turn in her direction, she ducks behind a corner. The waiter disappears into the crowd again. Catherine leaves her hiding place to follow. Behind her, the man with the shaved head steps out of a doorway. Robert moves to Catherine's former hiding place and glances over his shoulder. Catherine stops beside a pair of flower baskets to look around. A hand grabs her shoulder.
You're being followed.
Robert, it's the waiter from last night. He was in Mira's house.
I know, I'm serious. There is a man following you. You shouldn't be here.
I need to find her. It's
Listen,
my
you
only
don't
chance.
Know what you're into, Catherine.
Where is he?
Catherine.
Robert takes her arm. The two follow the waiter across the marketplace. Meanwhile, the man with the shaved head pursues them. Now, Mira sits at the window of a cafe across from the bearded waiter. As Robert and Catherine approach, the bearded man spots them and utters something to Mira. She follows him out the front door with her children in tow.
I told you to leave her be.
Please, just give me another minute.
Mira grits her teeth. The waiter looks from her to Catherine.
You know all about me. Just tell me about Jack. I promise that you'll never see me again. I need the truth.
Deirdre looks up at her mother. Mira swallows.
Take the children away from me. You know where.
Who's the bloke?
Robert's a friend. He's a friend of Jackson 9. He's another pilot.
Go on, it'll be all right.
She kneels to her daughter.
Bye, sweetie. Love you.
Deirdre hugs her, then follows the waiter, who holds her brother in the infant carrier.
Follow me.
Now in a cathedral.
Dermot is my brother. I had two others. One was shot by paramilitaries in front of his wife and three children as they ate dinner. The other died in an explosion.
Robert glances at Catherine.
I joined Vision to be a courier. Carried cash from Boston to London. Someone else saw it to Belfast.
And Jack knew about this?
Not until I left the airline. At first, he was upset with me. One night, Dermot came round to the house, asked Jack if he would carry on in my place, appealed to Jack's Irish Catholic heritage.
Catherine remembers the empty flight bag in Mira's closet.
The extra flight bag.
We had people at Heathrow, Logan, Belfast. Jack would set it down in the crew lounge and walk away.
A flashback shows the flight bag exchange.
They'd make the switch. A few seconds later, Jack would pick it up again, filled with cash from America for the IRA. See, I knew Jack was getting in over his head. The night before his trip, a woman called, said she wanted him to carry something the other way, from Heathrow to Boston. I didn't like it. It was riskier.
Tighter security to Heathrow.
He wouldn't have. Not the Jack I know.
When I heard about the crash, I was frantic. How could they have done that to Jack? Politically, it was insane. Turn the whole world against the cause. Which, of course, was the point.
Because it wasn't them.
He glances at Catherine.
It wasn't the IRA who planted the bomb.
It was a way to discredit the IRA and to sabotage the peace process.
Then Jack didn't know that he was carrying a bomb.
He never carried explosives. That was understood.
Oh my God.
I really do have to go. See, everything's coming apart, and well, I'm putting you at risk just by being here. Goodbye.
Mira extends her hand. Catherine eyes it for a moment, then shakes it.
You know, I'm sorry.
She moves to leave.
Wait a minute.
Robert stands in her way. He glances at Catherine, then turns back to Mira.
Who are the other pilots?
She gapes at him.
I need the names. Mira? Mira!
The Irishwoman runs off. Catherine stares at Robert, slack-jawed.
You knew about this?
Robert's eyes dart about. Catherine smirks.
You've known all along? When you came to my house, you knew that Jack might be involved in this?
We knew there was a smuggling ring. We didn't know who.
But you knew where it might lead.
Robert meets her gaze.
We suspected Jack. It was someone on that route.
You knew what I might find out.
I'm sorry.
She gives him a look of disbelief, then turns and leaves.
I trusted you.
Robert peers over a balcony railing. Below, a man in a trench coat looks up at him from the pews. Outside, Mira hurries along a path in the park. She stops in her tracks. The man with the shaved head stands in front of her.
Mira Boland, Detective Inspector York, Scotland Yard.
Another detective and two uniformed officers approach her from behind. Nearby, a female officer carries Mira's baby to a police car. Parked beside it is an open paddy wagon. Dermot and the white-bearded man sit inside. Mira climbs in beside her brother, and the police slam the doors. Now at the Lord Nelson Hotel.
Yeah, Robert Hart.
Thank you.
Thanks.
The clerk hands Robert his bill. As he reads it, Catherine approaches. She moves up beside him at the reception desk and addresses the clerk.
Excuse me, could I get my plane tickets? It's Catherine Lyons.
Certainly, madam.
Catherine, I'm sorry.
You were just doing your job.
Should have told you the very first day. It was a mistake not to.
Catherine keeps her gaze averted.
Anyway, I wasn't sure about Jack. It might not have been true.
You used me?
No, Catherine. I could see you didn't know anything. I should have told you my suspicions about Jack, but by then I was...
She cocks her head at him.
I was praying you'd never find out about him. Then you came here.
Let me ask you something. In a man's mind, who's more important, the woman he protects from the truth or the woman he tells everything?
Don't confuse me with Jack.
It doesn't matter. It's over.
No, it isn't. This is Northern Ireland we're talking about. There'll be special hearings, investigations, criminal trial. This is war, Catherine.
Not my war.
Your husband forgot what every pilot should know, that airplanes and politics don't mix. If I had done my job right...
He takes a step closer to her.
If I had gotten to him sooner, none of it would have happened.
Then we could all go on living a lie, Jack and his two happy families.
You're a courageous woman.
Catherine lowers her gaze and grins slightly.
Well, I've got a plane to catch.
I'll call you when you get home.
I'm not going home.
She heads out the door. Robert blinks as he watches her go. Now our view soars over the ocean to a green, hilly island. Seagulls drift in the wind over the rocky coastline. Now the tide rolls gently into the shore.
Here in the narrow passage and the pitiless north, perpetual betrayals, relentless, resultless fighting, a random fury of dirks in the dark, a struggle for survival of hungry, blind cells of life in the womb.
Catherine drives a blue automobile down the left lane of a misty highway along the coast. She passes a street sign that reads Antrim Road. Now words appear. Malin Head, Ireland. Catherine climbs the front staircase to a three-story building with a red brick entranceway. Inside, a sign on the wall reads, "Please seat yourself." Catherine enters and peers into a cozy lounge where several elderly people sit with cups of tea. One man sleeps in an armchair. Catherine looks to the other side of the room. Five younger people play cards at a table near a fireplace. Catherine moves past them to an empty table and takes a seat. As she pulls off her gloves, a waitress approaches.
Oh, hi. Just a cup of tea with milk, please.
Right you are.
The waitress departs. Catherine unbuttons her overcoat and pulls it off. She stares at a calendar hanging on a post. It shows two penguins standing side by side. Catherine's gaze drifts to the bar, where a woman with dark red hair and matching lipstick studies her. The woman approaches.
Hi. Can I get you a drink?
No, thanks.
I'm Jill Turner, WBTT in Boston. Do you mind my asking why you're here?
Are all those people reporters?
Yeah. We kind of hang out here.
Just waiting around for people like me.
Well, the relatives sit on the other side. We've pretty much exhausted each other.
The waitress brings Catherine's tea.
Thank you.
Jill sits across from her.
Half pint of Smithwick's, please. I recognized you from the photograph.
Excuse me, could you turn up the volume, please? Thank you.
On TV.
And now the news at the top of the hour with Erin O'Neill.
We begin with the latest developments on the plane crash off Malin Head. As investigators into the cause of the explosion...
Footage shows Mura and her brother in the paddy wagon. Catherine's jaw drops.
In London have rounded up a number of IRA suspects. The IRA has vehemently denied any involvement in the incident and puts the blame instead on loyalist Protestant splinter groups intent on sabotaging the fragile peace process in Northern Ireland. Protestant leaders in Belfast dismissed that charge as politically motivated, saying they deplore the loss of so many innocent lives. In a related story, authorities in the UK and the United States are investigating a series of incidents of crew-assisted smuggling aboard airliners, particularly over international waters. The stock market rallied again today, making it the fourth day in row that there was good news for the technology investors.
Look, can we at least talk?
I don't think so.
Catherine gets up and leaves. Now her blue car heads down a secluded stretch of road past a rocky landscape and sparse brown shrubs. Inside, Catherine turns the wheel, guiding her vehicle around a curve. She continues along a small inlet of water leading to the ocean. The sky is clear and sunny. Her car zooms past another sign for Antrim Road. Now a red-tipped lighthouse sits nestled atop a jagged shore. Catherine's car heads past a building with red-painted wood paneling and approaches a stretch of boathouses lining a wharf. She pulls into a space between two cars along the side of the road and gets out. Catherine looks up. In the sky, a helicopter approaches with a white, bulky apparatus hanging from a line underneath. Catherine walks past a yellow and blue checkered police vehicle to a barricade. On the other side, officers and soldiers stand around a green military tent and jeep. The helicopter flies closer, its cargo now becoming more visible. Inside a mesh net sits part of an airplane's wing. Catherine moves past the barricade to a road. Her pace slows as she examines a pile of debris stacked up beside her. Included are suitcases, loose clothing, and a lone shoe. Farther down lies a door from the crashed plane. Catherine moves ahead to a short pier. In front of her, the wing fragment lowers from the helicopter's line. The wing touches down on the pier. A worker rushes over to unhook the cable, and the helicopter flies off. Catherine approaches the hunk of wreckage. She stands over it, running a hand through her hair. Later, a fisherman wearing glasses carries a cage trap up a ramp between piers. He sets it down.
Excuse me, can you take me out to the crash site?
Can't. It's off limits.
My husband was on the plane.
I do scheduled trips for the relatives. That's the hotel.
I'm the pilot's wife. I just need to see the place where my husband went down.
Ah. That's different then.
He motions toward the ramp. Catherine follows him down to the lower pier where a white motorboat sits docked. Now the boat heads out of the harbor. Later, on the open sea, it leaves a trail of white foam in its wake. Catherine stands on deck, gripping a metal railing. Inside the cabin, the fisherman steers. The boat's prow cuts gently through the calm blue ocean. Catherine's hair billows in the wind as the boat approaches a buoy. The fisherman looks over his shoulder at her.
This is the GPS reading where they pulled up the cockpit.
Thank you.
Catherine stares at the buoy as their boat drifts past. The rusted algae-coated sea marker bobs in the water. A rectangular metal frame stands at its top, encasing a circuit panel. The white boat bobs gently in the sea. Catherine remembers Jack polishing his shoe. With a smile, he hands her the yellow and red towel.
Goodbye.
He kisses her cheek. Back on the boat, Catherine smiles and shakes her head. They circle the buoy, then motor off. A trail of white foam spouts up in their wake. Catherine remembers Jack standing outside their home in his pilot's uniform. She faces him with her back to the sea.
Just leave the dry cleaning. I'll pick it up when I get back on Tuesday.
Bye, Jack.
She waves, beaming. Jack gives her a faint grin, then turns to leave. Back on the boat, Catherine's leather-gloved hands grip the railing over the passing sea. She pulls off her left glove and straightens her fingers, displaying her wedding band. With a thoughtful stare, Catherine extends her hand toward the distant buoy. She pries the ring loose and holds it out over the water.
Bye, Jack.
She lets the ring go. It plops into the sea and sinks into the dark water. As Catherine stares off pensively, a grin creeps across her lips. Sunlight casts a golden glow on her windswept hair. Later, the boat pushes slowly through the expanse of sun-dappled ocean. Catherine stands at the stern, gazing off into their wake. Now, at the property outside her home, she and Maddie walk along the rocky coastline. Catherine carries a black cylindrical package.
Why would Dad tell us his mother was dead?
I don't know.
Do you think he told her about us?
I don't know that either. Your father had a lot of secrets. There's some things about him that you didn't know, honey, and... Well, there's things that you'll come to learn and never, ever understand.
It's gonna piss me off, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was bad, I'd rather not know.
Look, I wish he was here to make sense of it for you. And for me, but...
She stands facing her daughter.
In time, you're gonna learn more, honey. You will. And you'll understand it even less if you're anything like me.
Why is that?
I don't know. All I can tell you is that growing up does not mean you get all the answers, even though you have to still ask the damn questions.
They continue walking. Catherine puts her arm around her daughter.
The most important thing to know is that he loved you with all his heart. Okay? Nothing can take that away.
They stop again and look each other in the eyes.
What about you?
Oh, honey.
Catherine hugs her daughter.
I love you so much. You have no idea how much I love you.
Maddie smiles, her chin resting on her mother's shoulder. They separate.
I got you something.
The black cylindrical package.
I saw this in this funny old place in Ireland and I thought of you.
Maddie unwraps a poster. It shows the two penguins standing side by side.
You like it?
Yeah. Thanks.
Do you remember that day when you told me about the penguins and about yourself? Do you remember how you felt afterwards?
Yeah. Relieved.
Yeah, yeah. It's better to know people as they really are and not how we want them to be.
I guess I'll never know Dad as he really was.
No. No, but there is someone we could get to know. Someone who just might want to know us.
Who?
His mother. Your grandmother.
Now, outside a multi-storied gray brick building, a taxi drives off. Catherine and Maddie approach the front staircase.
You ready?
Yeah.
They head up the stairs. The front awning reads, Forest Park Nursing Home. The mother and daughter enter. Inside, they walk down a long hallway. At the other end, a white-haired woman sits in a wheelchair. Catherine and Maddie exchange a glance. The figure in front of them grows closer, silhouetted against the light from a door's window. Catherine and Maddie stride confidently forward. Fade to white.